scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yale, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, friends, let's get it going. We are underway on another hour of Flames Talk. It is a Wednesday, March 26th, and with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, my name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to our Groundworks downtown studio on this Wednesday. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy. How are you today?
I am hanging in, and we had another fun one. The Flames return home to the Scotiabank Saddledome. Credit to our buddy Jonathan Davis over at VSiN Sports, who pulled this out. But the Flames now 5-for-5 this year in their first home game back after a road trip of three or more games, and they did it again on Tuesday night with another 4-3 overtime win over the Seattle Kraken. And the Nazem Kadri show is very well underway, and kind of feels like we're all just spectators at this point. Hey, I mean, Nazem Kadri has risen to he's at the very top of the billing. He's first on the credits, and he's putting on like an Oscar-worthy performance with what he's doing right now. What a performance from number 91 again in another comeback win for the Flames on Tuesday night. And you know, Wes, I remember a quote, you know, out at the charter terminal in 2022. And I believe the Flames had just arrived back for ahead of game 7 between the Flames and the Dallas Stars. So they had lost game 6 in Dallas. They flew the next day and arrived back. And I remember a quote that day at the airport, and it was getting ready for game 7 between the Flames and the Dallas Stars. And the quote was, "This is the time of year where big players step up with big plays in big games." And I know that we're not at a game 7 mentality yet, and we're not at those type of stakes, but that's Nazem Kadri right now. And that's Jonathan Huberdeau right now. And this segment's going to focus primarily on number 91. And more recently, maybe it's been more focused on Huberdeau because of the big goals he's scored. But the two highest paid players on this team have been their best players at the most important stretch of the season. And focusing specifically on Nazem, should we really be surprised? I mean, honestly, should we be surprised that this guy is getting the job done when it matters the most? Because this is a guy who's made somewhat of a career out of it. Go back and watch and I know there were different missteps at different times earlier in his career and some bad playoff suspensions that hurt his Maple Leafs teams. But you take a look at his playoff outings with the Colorado Avalanche, and specifically in the 2022 postseason when he won that Stanley Cup, I don't think we should be surprised by what we're seeing from a guy who is the ultimate gamer in Nazem Kadri. And he's living up to that reputation right now.
Yeah. And you knew, right? Like, it sort of reminds me of what the reputation of Jerome Iginla was in his heyday, where opponents knew you were sort of best to just kind of leave Jerome alone.
Leave him to his own devices, right?
Like, doesn't Brandon Montour receive an unofficial assist on last night's game winner? Because you knew as soon as he poked that bear or tried to fight the bear that something, if Nazem Kadri got an opportunity to end that game, that he was going to take full advantage. Like, that's just the expectation. And I know we'll hear coming up here from some of his teammates who feel the same way, but you're absolutely right. Like, we talk about how your best players need to be your best players. It's one of those sort of tired old cliches, and yet it's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And if you look at these past four victories, like if you look at the four game win streak, well, Nazem Kadri has 5 goals, including becoming the first player in Flames history to score the OT winner in back-to-back.
Isn't
games.
That a crazy one?
That's like
when
a
I
wild
saw
stat,
that when I saw
it?
That one on Tuesday night, I was like, excuse me?
It's kind of amazing that it hasn't happened before.
Mm-hmm.
But Nazem Kadri has 5 goals in the last 4 games, and Jonathan Huberdeau has 7 points. And you and I sat here and I don't think we were wrong at the time. I wouldn't go back and take it back anything we said, but we talked about how those two could not be the only guys producing. And yet, with 12 games to go and with Matt Coronato very much having joined the club of guys who are producing, you need those guys to put you on their back. And that is precisely what we're seeing. That's exactly what you saw from Nazem Kadri in one of those performances. And I don't say this part lightly as somebody who's watched the Flames play 1,000 and some games during my career as a beat writer. There's not a lot of games like they can mix together, right? And yet I think you and I will remember Kadri's performance last night. It's one of those ones that we're going to look back and say, remember when Nazem Kadri did this? Like that, it was that quality for me.
There's been a few games that I can remember in Nazem's time here where you've just been like, that guy is made for games like this. And I think about, it was really the last time last season that it felt like the Flames still had some life. And they had traded away Lindholm by this point, but Tanev and Hanifin were still members of the team. And they went into Edmonton in late February and pulled off an impressive victory over the Oilers. And it started with an early Nazem Kadri goal. And I just remember, like, this was kind of like, hey, if the Flames are gonna make a statement to themselves, this is gonna be the night to do it. And they did. And yes, they ended up missing the playoffs by a large margin. We get that. But I just remember saying, geez, Battle of Alberta, Nazem Kadri in Edmonton, best player on the ice, he or Noah Hanifin that night, and he set the tone right from the get-go. And I kind of felt that way about him on Tuesday against Seattle, because it wasn't just the end of the game. It wasn't just the game-tying goal and the game-winning goal. The other thing is you talk about the 5 goals he scored in the last 4 games, like which one has been, I guess there was an empty netter,
right?
But it was an empty netter that completed a crazy third period comeback. But the other ones have been game-tying goals or game-winning goals. The game-tying goal against the Rangers after they fell down 1-0. The game-tying goal, the game-winning goal against the New York Islanders. The game-tying and the game-winning goal against the Seattle Kraken. Like,
seems
not
good.
Like he's just scoring goals. He's scoring the biggest goals of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it's not him, it's Jonathan Huberdeau. And while those two have been separated on different lines, they remain for me very much sort of joined at the hip in this conversation. You're right, like we're talking about Nazem Kadri today more specifically, and I wrote extensively about Nazem Kadri last night because he set a franchise record, because mm-hmm. he was the one who came up clutch against the Seattle Kraken, and yet those two guys, very specifically the Calgary Flames' two best forwards, have been exactly that during this stretch.
Ryan Huska talked a little bit about that after a optional practice at the Scotiabank Saddledome on Wednesday. This was the head coach when West asked him about, you know, top players at this time of year.
Your top guys set the standard for what people below them do. They'll follow. And if you have a group of top players that are in and out, or they work when it's convenient for them, that's what your team's going to look like. If you have top players that are your hardest working guys and most competitive guys and most driven guys, your team's going to take on those characteristics. So it's such an important thing, and especially at this time of the year when every game is so important for us, that our leaders or our top players have that mindset and they understand there's responsibility that comes with that role or position that they've earned.
And, you know, you throw in Mackenzie Weegar and the way he's been playing. I mean, there's three guys that right now, especially in the absence of their captain, there's three guys that have stepped up and stepped up to the ultimate degree and have kept the Flames right there, tooth and nail, in this playoff race. And honestly, when you think about it, I do think that the Flames will close the gap on the 4 points by, I mean, they've got, of the three games in hand, I mean, they've got some San Jose's and Anaheim's in there, and they will win, you know, a good chunk of those games, I think it's safe to say. Whether or not they win all of them, you never know. There's always those upsets. But, like, this thing is probably going to come right down to it, and I think it's important to point out the Flames are probably going to need to finish ahead of St. Louis in points because the Blues hold a decent edge in the first tiebreaker and a significant edge in the second tiebreaker. So it's not 4 points, it's 5 points, is really, I think, the way you have to look at it right now.
And flesh that out a little bit, because I think a lot of people are wondering about those tiebreakers that you mentioned. I think it's worth just fleshing that out.
Tiebreaker number one, if it comes down to playoff positioning or standings, is regulation wins. So the St. Louis Blues have 28 regulation wins and the Flames have 26. So the Flames would have to, and then the next one is regulation overtime wins, of which the Blues have 34 and the Flames have 31. So essentially the Flames would have to get, because they'd probably realistically have to get past St. Louis by three regulation wins to move into a spot where they can win a tiebreak. And maybe that happens, but right now St. Louis does hold the edge in the tiebreak, which could end up being significant when it's all said and done, and definitely on March 26th, it remains a consideration.
And so essentially, you know, if you're headed home in the car and trying to follow along, essentially, the kind of further you get in the tiebreaker format, essentially what the NHL is trying to do is take shootout wins out of the final equation.
Make it the third tiebreaker.
Yeah. And so right now, the Blues with 28 regulation wins, the Flames with 26. Obviously, if they can win three of those game in hand in regulation, then we're having a different discussion about the tiebreaker, but there is an uphill climb there.
It doesn't even get to, so it goes 1, 2, 3. Yeah, it doesn't even get to head-to-head until the fourth tiebreaker. Yeah. So it is regulation wins, regulation overtime wins, then head-to-head.
And then is best mascot still fifth or what?
Or best guy named Shan on local radio show, of which I think we've got the tiebreaker on that one.
I'd have to check the directory in St. Louis, but we have a Shan for sure.
The best one. Let's be honest.
The best.
I've been so impressed by what we're seeing from Nazem Kadri. I've been so impressed. By the way, text line open, 960-960. If you want to jump in and get your thoughts in on what we're seeing from this group and what we're seeing specifically from their top players, what we're specifically seeing from Nazem Kadri. I know when I was watching that play out, I said to myself, oh boy, that's a big giveaway. And I wondered what Seattle was going to do with it. And Vince Dunn made the decision for him. Vince Dunn said, I'm going to go to try to win the game. And I would imagine, you know, Dunn's been in this league long enough. He's played 3-on-3 long enough. I would imagine Vince Dunn knew that by taking that risk, if he didn't score and it didn't turn into like a, if it was kicked out by Dustin Wolf, he knew there was going to be a great chance the other way. And he decided to take that risk. And hey, if it pays off, we're talking about what a great risk that was taken by Vince Dunn. He steps up, blasts one, and Dustin Wolf makes a 10-bell stop, and Matt Coronato picks up the rebound right on a Nazem Kadri stick. I could have made that pass to Nazem Kadri. He had so much room, and Kadri took it with speed. He was definitely gassed on it, but I know I thought as soon as Dustin Wolf made that stop, I was like, game over. And I didn't even click in until about half a second later that it was Nazem Kadri. Then I'm like, okay, it's really game over. Because in my head, I'm watching that in the hot stove lounge, and I'm thinking the exact same thing. I'm like, big game, big player, big time of the game. This is when Nazem Kadri shines. And I really felt like the game was over at that point. And I didn't know how he was going to do it, but I thought he might just rip it and get it past Joey Decord. Instead, he decided to deke him out of his jock strap. So it turns out I was not the only person who felt like that's the way it was going to go, because some of his teammates chimed in on that on Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. This was Blake Coleman post-game after Nazem Kadri's overtime winner.
Frosty gave me a little pop on the chest. And go, here goes showtime, and then that was it. So we had a lot of faith in him. He looked a little gassed, but and the dome ice can be a little tricky late in games. But like I said, he's just got that it factor.
Here comes showtime. I like that from Blake Coleman. Here comes showtime.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a
Morgan
showtime.
Morgan Frost, I believe, deserves the credit for that line.
Yes, here comes showtime for Morgan Frost. This was Dustin Wolf when he was asked about it.
I had my stick on my head, and I was praying to God he put it in the net. If there's anyone on Brie Blair, I know he's going to score. And, he did just that. And I was glad we were able to get a whistle in overtime to get him back out of the box. And No, it just worked out very nicely.
I do wonder, I wonder if, because it was Dustin Wolf who did freeze the puck.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was thinking about that when he froze that puck, because he is generally, even in non-overtime, he is generally loath to cover the puck. He loves to keep it going. He's got such a high IQ about what's happening in front of him that he really likes to keep momentum going and really likes to avoid stoppages if he can. I wonder if he was thinking about that, and I wonder if he was thinking, oh, geez, let's get Kadri out of the box because he's a rather important figure for us in overtime. And if he did, credit to him, another assist that he won't get, but also credit to him for making that stop.
I mean, a guy with Dustin Wolf's awareness, there's no way he didn't have that in the back of his mind.
That's a fair point by you. This was Adam Klapka.
One's my favorite one, by the way.
This was Klapka on Wednesday morning after practice at the Dome.
It's so sick. I mean, he's such a good hockey player, such a good person. So, I mean, as soon as he went by himself on the net, I just told Vlade, just open the doors, and I was ready to jump on the ice. So I knew he's going to score that goal.
Just open the doors, Vlade. Let's go.
Just open the doors. Let's go. Let's celebrate.
Reminds me of early 2019 or 2018, early 2018.
This is the Riddick photo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of that. They played this game in Colorado. They were so much better than the Avalanche that night, but were trailing late in the game until Elias Lindholm stepped up and ripped one past whoever the Avalanche goalie was, and they won that game, or they tied the game 2-2, I think, sent it to overtime, and then Johnny Gaudreau had a breakaway in 3-on-3, and there was the David Riddick shot of him already celebrating. He's already out of his crease with his arms up before Johnny even put the move on.
Great.
And that's what that reminds me of.
Great photo. Johnny's just about to start his deke, and you just see Riddick with his hands raised at the far end. Hilarious.
Kind of what I felt.
I think Dustin Wolf probably could have done that last night.
Yeah.
And you mentioned...
And if you haven't seen it, go take a look at Ryan Dietrich of the Flames digital crew. He has a great video of it, and it's taken from above. And so you see the red flame too, and you see him holding his stick on his head and then celebrating. But it's right from on top of him. It's a great shot as well.
You mentioned the risk that Vince Dunn takes there, and you know I think it's one of the things that makes this time of year so fascinating in a way, is that that's what you can do when you're out of the playoffs, right? If we're sitting here and Uyghur or Rasmus Anderson took that risk as a Flames defenseman in overtime, we'd be breaking that down, right? Is that the right decision when you need both points so badly? And yet with the Seattle Kraken playing out the string, it's kind of a no-brainer for Dunn there. At least that's the way I look at it.
I did too. And honestly, I probably would have. I probably wouldn't be criticizing. Like, say that was Uyghur who did that and it led to an Eberle breakaway and they won the game. I would probably, I can't say for sure, but I would probably be saying, no, you know what? I appreciate a big game player stepping up trying to win the game in overtime. I would probably, that's probably what I would think.
Well,
but you're right. It probably, like, from you and I having both been in high-pressure NHL games down the stretch ourselves, mm-hmm. We can
just see, not on the ice. We've watched them though.
No, I've been out there. Are you kidding? No, I having obviously not been in that situation, but you would think maybe that there is a little bit of that like, okay, one team's out of it. They're playing a little bit looser. Maybe there would be a more hesitation from a guy on the Flames side to step up and do something like that.
I mean, it's what overtime has become. And I think it was Blake Coleman, if I'm remembering correctly, who essentially said as much last night that, hey, you trade chances and you hope yours go in and theirs don't. But and the way we got on that topic with Coleman last night was just talking about the magnitude of that Dustin Wolf save.
Yeah.
And another one of those, was it Eberle that sets up Dunn there? Am I right about that?
Yes, yeah, I believe so.
Really good pass into the slot. And another one of those saves that Dustin Wolf made look way too easy because his positioning was so good.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't necessarily need to rob Vince Dunn there because he anticipated that play as well as he did. But just another example of Wolf coming up clutch when they needed him. Like, that save, and not only the save, you know, beyond that, to control the rebound as well as he did, spit it to Coronado and you're going the other direction. I mean, that is another game-changing moment for Dustin Wolf. And what a credit it is to the rookie goaltender that we kind of gloss over those already.
And no, he will not get an assist on that. They changed the rule.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know either. I got a couple texts on it as I was doing the post game on Tuesday because somebody asked that on the text line. I was like, huh, I wonder if it hit a Seattle player or something.
I asked
before.
Dustin about it.
I know, and he said, I guess we'll see. But no, they changed the rule. If you make a save and it goes right to a teammate or something like that, the NHL does not count it as an assist for a goalie, which, okay.
And you know what?
I think if it's a block shot for a player, though, it does count as an assist.
I mean, they're always looking for reasons to give a secondary assist. Like, if they can find someone grazing the pocket, at some point, they're getting a secondary assist. I understand that they probably don't want goalies getting 10 assists a year off rebounds, but it is a shame that Dustin Wolf doesn't get credit for that one last night.
Agreed. Let's hit the text line at 960-960. Lots to dive into following last night's win on Kadri and beyond. I like this one. And I had been thinking about this over the last couple of days as well. I just know Blues fans are punching the air right now, knowing that Nazem Kadri could be the reason the Flames leap them for the second wild card. What an animal Naz is. Yes, I have definitely thought about the Nazem Kadri-St. Louis rivalry. And I won't lie, because I thought what happened in St. Louis was so gross in the 2022 playoffs. And I thought what happened between and how the Blues kind of were like, let's not deal with it until we get shamed into dealing with it, is kind of what it looked like on the outside. I wouldn't mind seeing Nazem get the last laugh on St. Louis because of that. The Binnington thing, the BS racism that he had to deal with during that series. I would love it, in fact, if Naz could get one over on them again. It would be pretty cool to see.
I just think what's really cool to see, and I'm going to lump two guys together here. I'll lump together Kadri and Blake Coleman, and the way they impact the game is quite separate, but they're prime examples of how it's total rubbish to think that a guy gets his cup and then kind of stops caring about competing for one. Like, you can really see, in fact, I sort of said as much in conversation with Ryan Lomberg today. I said, you know, you can see that Kadri, who hasn't played a playoff game since he hoisted the Stanley Cup with the Avalanche in 22, you can see how bad he wants to get back. It was actually funny. Lomberg said they were laughing on the bench. This is another great story about the bench before Kadri's winner, and this was not on the breakaway, but he said they were laughing on the bench that when Kadri came out of the penalty box, he even bothered looking toward the bench to confirm that he should stay on the ice. He said the joke on the bench was that everyone assumed Kadri wouldn't even look at the bench. He'd just skate straight to the faceoff dot because he wanted to go win that game.
Yeah.
Tells you a lot about what, like, he's just such a gamer.
Yeah.
And we're not having that conversation just because of what he's done in the last two games.
Mike in Calgary says it's wild to think the Flames are already 2 points off their entire point total from last season. No doubt about that. A couple questions about passing Minnesota. We'll deal with that a little bit more in hour two on this Wednesday edition of the program. Brennan says the top players are playing like leaders right now, but what I'd like to know is where's the praise for the way Huska's gotten them there, as well as, let's face it, he hasn't had three top lines like some teams. I think we've given lots of credit to Ryan Huska this year for sure. What else?
I think he deserves a ton of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely does. Even, you know, the obvious things that we can credit a coach for are buy-in on a system, and there's certainly no question that he has that. But, you know, the two sort of obvious ones for me are always roster or lineup adjustments, and I guess this would fall under the same category, but goaltending assignments. And, you know, you look back to the start of this four-game win streak, well, a pretty significant roster or lineup tinker. He split Kadri and Huberdeau. Mm-hmm. Now he's got two lines suddenly going. Like, it wasn't just the switch to the new tie that got things headed in the right direction. And you look at the way he's managed his goalies and the spots he's put Dan Vladar in of late. That's been really successful for this team as well.
Last one. This says the weight of that Coronado pass was perfect, Pat Fair. I was kidding when I said I could have made that pass. It was a very well-placed pass from Coronado, and it didn't allow Seattle to get back and try to disrupt. I was kidding when I said I could. Anytime you hear me say I could do something like an NHLer could, yeah, you know I'm kidding, because there's a large realization that I cannot.
Yeah, but, I mean, in fairness, how many of those guys could read Jiffy spots like you do?
Don't you forget it either.
Yeah, I don't.
Don't you forget it. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk. He is Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now time for a Wednesday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson along with you. And now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday. And, gents, wanted to start with this one because I think it's safe to say that we're now ready for Michael Backlund's imminent return, whether it's Thursday, whether it's Saturday. It feels like the captain is knocking on the door for a return, and no update at practice on Wednesday. But, again, it's close, and that's very good news for the team. But when Michael Backlund returns, I think it's fair to say that it all of a sudden puts Yegor Sharangovich into kind of a limbo situation. And where does Yegor play with the way the Kadri line is going, with the way the Frost line is going, and with Michael Backlund certainly going to take the spot between Coleman and Farabee? Where does that leave Yegor Sharangovich, guys? Where does he fit in this lineup when Michael Backlund returns?
I don't know. That's the honest answer. I mean, we've gone from watching a guy who led the team in goals with 31 and finished second in the team in points with 59 in 82 games last season, to watching a guy who has struggled for most of this season with and without the puck. I mean, you look at the totals, 12 goals and 24 points in 62 games. So his offense has fallen way off, and you know, he's not an overly physical guy and is okay defensively, okay in the faceoff circle, but he certainly hasn't had the type of impact this season that he had last season, especially once he got comfortable in the back half of the season. He was, in my opinion, one of the Flames' best players. He has not been that guy this season, but is a guy they've invested in. His contract extension hasn't even kicked in yet. So I understand why the coaches keep giving him opportunities. And you know, the latest opportunity came because of the injury to Michael Backlund and them needing someone to play up the middle on that line. And he's had some good moments since Backlund got hurt, but maybe didn't seize the opportunity like I was hoping that he would. So I don't see him fitting into the top nine right now, guys. I mean, they've got the Kadri and the kids line going, and they've got that new look line with Morgan Frost between Jonathan Huberdeau and Matt Coronato that's tearing it up right now. If you put Michael Backlund back between Joel Farabee and Blake Coleman, then you circle back to a line that seemed to be building some chemistry prior to the Backlund injury, or the latest Backlund injury. And then you've got a fourth line that I thought had a really strong game on Tuesday night. I mean, that goal that Adam Klapka scored was a thing of beauty. And you know, Kevin Rooney, I think, has played a lot better hockey since the team came back from the Four Nations break. And you know, Ryan Lomberg's a really important part of the leadership group. I guess the good news for Sharangovich is, or at least potentially good news for him, is he's versatile in the sense that he can play up and down your lineup, and he can play all three forward positions. So maybe there's an opportunity for him on the fourth line. I'm not sure Klapka's coming off the game that he had on Tuesday night. I would be surprised to see Rooney come out with the role that he plays in the penalty kill. And Lomberg, he's a guy who's been a regular, and I'd be surprised to see him come out of the lineup as well. So, guys, I don't think he fits into the top nine when Backlund's back, but I'm not sure I see him playing in the fourth line, at least not on Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm with you, Wilsey, and that's what makes this one tricky to answer for me. And the stat that I always watch really closely with Yegor Sharangovich when it pertains to how are they going to use him, and could they scratch him for the second time? I believe it would be this month. I think it was March 2nd or 3rd that he sat. Anyway,
in Carolina,
within the last several weeks. The stat I always watch is shorthanded ice, because that to me can be what keeps Yegor Sharangovich in the lineup, is a role shorthanded. Like when you start to look at, okay, well, I'm not sure I'd want to mess with the fourth line. Lomberg is an important player, especially on the bench, you know, sort of the ringleader of the positivity and all that sort of stuff. And I do know that they value his been there and done that as a guy who was just last season on a cup winning team. Klapka certainly gives you a different look on the forecheck. We saw another flash of the skill he can bring last night, and yet neither of those guys are penalty killing. And so if you're going to be using Yegor Sharangovich on both sides of special teams, even if he's not in your top nine, you'd have to find a spot for him on your fourth line. It's just, he's sort of playing his way off those special teams too. And, you know, I won't go through the sort of whole rigmarole, because Wilsey summed it up pretty well, but I'll just say what's so concerning for the Flames when you watch Yegor Sharangovich is he just looks like one of those guys who is such an awkward fit for the style of hockey that gets played in the NHL, not just by the Calgary Flames, in the months of March and April. Mm-hmm. As the games have gotten harder and heavier, and the magnitude of those one-on-one battles has increased, I think we've seen a Yegor Sharangovich who has not raised his level to match that. Like we've talked about it. I'll be a bit of a broken record here, but some of the lack of one-on-one battle victories, and to be quite frank, the just how quickly those battles are over, how quickly he's lost them and the puck has gone the other direction, has got to be alarming for the Flames. He's got to figure out how to have more of an impact in those type of games. I know it's not his style of hockey. No one's ever going to describe Yegor Sharangovich as a heavy and hard player, but he's got to figure out how to have some effectiveness when that, you know, when the game starts to go into the mud, what are you going to do to impact it?
And it's for that reason that I wonder if Thursday is when Michael Backlund comes back, if it's just a straight swap, because that way you're only making a change on one line. That way you're, because I thought all four lines contributed to what happened on Tuesday night in the win over Seattle. I thought the fourth line had one of their better games in quite some time. Obviously, they scored the first goal, but I thought that Rooney, Lomberg, Klapka in limited ice time had a pretty good impact on the game. Wilsey, to Wes's point, you know, Sharangovich's PK role has definitely become less pronounced compared to where it was earlier in the year or compared to where it was last season. And so I kind of wonder if the straight swap is the way to go. And I'm not saying that becomes permanent, but you're going up against a Dallas team that does play a pretty heavy brand. You're talking about a Peter DeBoer coach team, one of the best teams in the NHL. I don't know. I don't know if I would. I mean, obviously you want your captain back in the lineup the minute he's good to go, and swapping him on that line with Sharangovich makes nothing but sense, because now you've got full confidence in Backlund, Coleman and that duo, and Farabee's been a nice fit there. Bam, you've got your shutdown line. It's ready to go, and you don't have to even think about it anymore. But I don't know. That I feel like maybe you'd be overthinking yourself to be like, okay, well, then we got to put Sharangovich here. And I'm not saying, again, this is not a permanent thing, but at least for Thursday, I wonder if the straight swap is the way to go. And then, you know, depending on how Thursday goes, you can see how you can get Yegor in, whether it's in the top nine or in the bottom three in that fourth line for Saturday's game against Edmonton. And you got the back-to-back on Monday, Tuesday. So I just, and honestly, guys, at times the way he's played, he's put himself in this situation where he's vulnerable to be a healthy scratch. And so, And I firmly believe he is playing through something, and I do think that is making some sort of impact on what we're seeing from him. But nonetheless, I still think the straight swap, if Backlund's ready to go Thursday against the Stars, I'm just swapping him for Sharon Govich and keeping everything the same.
Yeah, and on the Michael Backlund front, watching a very optional practice today, the eye test indicates to me that he definitely is trending in the right direction. I just thought he was moving around a little bit better today, guys. You know, Ryan Huska said as much after practice that, you know, he continues to get closer to a return to the lineup, and I would not be surprised if that was for Thursday's game against the Stars. You could certainly use him against that group. They are a deep team up front, and they can certainly roll four lines, and all four of them can do some damage offensively. So you'd love to have Michael Backlund back to center that checking line, to take those defensive zone and shorthanded faceoffs, to hard match maybe against their top line. So we'll see what happens. But I definitely think he looked a little bit better at practice today than he did earlier in the week. And when I think about how the lines looked at practice earlier this week, and when we were wondering if Michael Backlund would be back for Tuesday's game against the Kraken, it looked like Yegor Sharangovich was a placeholder for Martin Pospisil on the right side of that Kadri and the kids line. So I do wonder if that is an indication of what is to come when Michael Backlund is ready to return, whether that be Thursday against the Stars or maybe Saturday for the Battle of Alberta versus the Oilers.
The other possibility, guys, and we've seen Ryan Huska and other coaches use this tactic over the years, is, you know, set a guy up as a placeholder so he knows he's next up to be a healthy scratch and hope that it sparks something in him.
Yeah.
But I think the lack of lasting response from his last healthy scratching is pretty worrisome in this case.
And guys, the good news is there's some healthy competition going on here, right? So I do think that could have been a shot across the bow, Wes. And then Adam Klapka, who knows that when Backlund's back, someone's coming out, and it could be him, goes and plays a really good game last night. So I do think that that healthy competition has fueled this team for all of the season, really. And, you know, everybody's well aware that Backlund's going to come back, and as soon as he's ready, they're going to insert him in the lineup, and that means someone's got to come out. So maybe it's Sharangovich, maybe it's Klapka, maybe it's somebody else, but boy, with the way the team played last night, it's hard to imagine any change but Backlund going in and potentially Sharangovich coming out.
It really does give you a chance, doesn't it? I know that every game is of such importance right now, but it gives you a chance to make sure Michael Backlund is as ready as you can possibly get him before you rush him back. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, guys, if we don't see him tomorrow for that exact reason.
Yeah, because you do guys, have those options.
Yeah, can I just finish with this, just on somewhat of a positive note? Sometimes good players have bad seasons, right? Like, this season did not start the way that Yegor Sharangovich wanted it to. You know, he's coming off a career year, set NHL records for most goals and points in a season by a Belarusian player, you know, had to come into training camp in the preseason feeling confident, and then he gets hurt in the preseason finale and misses the first seven games of the season. And this isn't me making excuses for how he's played since he returned to the lineup, but sometimes good players have bad seasons. So I'm hoping that this is just a good player, because he was a good player for the Flames last season, having a bad season. And hey, there's still time for him to change that narrative. There's 12 big games coming up in the regular season, and hopefully some playoff games after that. So let's hope that he finds his game. If not this season, then certainly once his contract extension kicks in next season.
It's the Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. Guys, I know that maybe the numbers haven't been popping, but beyond just the counting goals and assists, what are we seeing in Morgan Frost over the last week or so?
Yeah, the numbers aren't popping, but he's popping, or at least starting to for me. So really, I think back to game one of that last road trip, which he was playing close to his hometown of Aurora, Ontario, and he had his dad, Andy, who was a longtime public address announcer for the Maple Leafs at the old Air Canada Center in attendance. I'm sure lots of family and friends were there. And it looked like he scored a goal to get the monkey off his back. And then it gets overturned on that, at least at the time, controversial offside challenge. And all the looks we got indicated it was an onside play. But I was told after the game that it was offside. We just maybe didn't get the right angle. So that might have got him going. But I think he's been a way more dangerous player really since the start of that road trip. And, you know, last night he had, I would say, two grade A opportunities to put the puck in the net. And he's just a little bit snake bitten when it comes to goal scoring right now. But, you know, I really like how he looks up the middle on what's been a really good line between Jonathan Huberdeau and Matt Coronato, who, you know, those two guys, along with Nazem Kadri, were the Flames' best players during that four-game road trip where they lost the first game and then won the last three, and all three guys were impactful again last night. So, you know, it's interesting what Ryan Huska said earlier this week, that on paper he wasn't sure that was going to work because Huberdeau is the best playmaker on the team, but, you know, Frost is also a really strong playmaker, so they weren't sure that having Frost up the middle with Huberdeau on the left, even if you've got a shooter in Coronato on the right, was something that was going to work. But, you know, sometimes things look good on paper and don't look good on the ice, and then sometimes it's the opposite of that. So I say that he's trending in the right direction, and it kind of feels to me like he's ready to have a breakthrough game here.
Yeah, I like the way he's deferred lately, and I talk so often about deferring to your line mates as a bad thing, and a lot of times it is, but I think some of Morgan Frost's decision making in these past few games has really helped Matt Coronato to flourish the way he has. I like the way Morgan Frost has been kind of determined to kick the puck out to his wings, whether that's to Huberdeau or to Coronato. And the other thing I'll add, and then I'll throw it over to Pat because I know we don't have a ton of time, but the other thing I'll add is just how good he was in the faceoff circle last night. And that has to be something that the Flames as a group get better at. We've been banging that drum for a long time, but I think he finished 9 of 13 last night at the dot for a long time. He was actually clipping along at 100%. And if he can secure more often than not possession for that line with those two guys that he currently has on his wing, good things are going to happen.
I'm liking it. I think he's had his opportunities. He had a couple of opportunities where he was robbed by Joey Decord on Tuesday, including one to end the game before Nazem Kadri's heroics in OT. He continues to help this group in the faceoff dot, and that's been important. And it was one of the big things we were talking about when they acquired him, was how he might be able to help in one of their biggest weak areas, and that is in the faceoff dot. And yeah, it just feels like he's getting more and more comfortable, and maybe he's found guys that it makes the most sense for him to play with. And I do think whether Huberdeau remains on his left side or not, I do think having Coronato on his right side is a really nice thing to have, because you do have, I mean, you got two really strong playmakers in Frost and Huberdeau on that line right now. But if they do at some point decide to put Jonathan back with Nazem Kadri, and who knows where that goes, I still think having Frost and Coronato on a line together gives you a little bit of pop. And so I'm with you. He is, Wills, he's starting to pop for me. He's getting more opportunities. He's more dangerous. His entries have been, you know, Wes talks about the decision-making. I've really liked his entry decision making, and I really like what he's doing, as he's very gifted and probably at this point best guy on the team in terms of 5-on-5 zone entries. And he does that adeptly. And I didn't love his decision making in the first little while as a member of the team, but that's really taken a jump forward, and that's really helped his line succeed too. So it's been good to see. And that's obviously a positive for this group as they go down the stretch.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for me, he's really been key since Michael Backlund's been out, because the Flames didn't have a lot of depth down the middle prior to that injury, and certainly lost a lot of their depth when the captain, you know, went out and he's missed the last almost seven games. So, you know, Morgan Frost is one of the number of guys who has stepped up and done his best to try to help fill the big shoes or skates left behind by Michael Backlund. But if he continues to trend in the right direction and the captain comes back healthier than the last time we saw him, then all of a sudden the Flames are looking a lot stronger up the middle of the ice. And of course, when you get to this time of the year, down the stretch and heading towards the playoffs, you better be good up the middle. If you're not, your season probably isn't going to last much longer.
That'll do it for a Wednesday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable. Wilsey will do it from the Dome on Thursday. Appreciate it, pal.
All right, guys. See you tomorrow.
He is Derek Wills. My name is Pat Steinberg, and Wes Gilbertson to complete our Daily Flames roundtable on this Wednesday. Shan, Cam, our outstanding producers this hour, as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk and the Daily Flames roundtable, brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport.